This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Jayatri Das, in for Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode, DNA Adapted. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We're just at the beginning of discovering all the ways that the environment changes our DNA. Maybe it's what we eat, our habits, or stress. We've long suspected that when a pregnant woman is stressed, her child is also affected. Stress becomes an inheritance of sorts, just like dark hair, freckles, or sickle cell disease. To understand this better, scientists are studying what happens after isolated stressful events. One case study starts with a massive ice storm in 1998 that left millions of people without power. Irina Zhorov has that story.
Once the rain started, it came down for days. Temperatures fell below zero, as thick ice encased trees, roads, power lines, everything really. Power failed. Julie Grillot took it in from her little house in Saint-Jean-sur-Richelieu, a city southeast of Montreal. We spoke by phone recently, and she remembered what it was like.
There were a blackout and no electricity at all. It was like a war zone. All the electric pole were down, the electric wire was down. There was nobody there in the street. It was pretty scary.
Neighbors evacuated, but Julie wanted to stay at home. She had a fireplace to keep warm. A couple of friends, frozen out of their own homes, came to stay with her too. They took turns staying up all night to stoke the fire and cooked canned spaghetti on the wood stove. In all, 6 adults and 5 children camped out in her house.
And with my big belly of 8 months.
Julie is a sunny, everything is going to be okay kind of person. And she knew that probably everything with her pregnancy would be fine. But she's still stressed.
I try to not be nervous. I try to be calm. I try to be to get some sleep. It wasn't easy.
This dragged on for more than 2 weeks.
I was telling my baby, "Don't come out now. Don't come out now. Stay in. You're better in. You're better in than out." So, but I started delivering. So the 22nd of January.
Around the same time, same ice storm, 25 miles north in Montreal, psychiatry professor Suzanne King had also lost power. She went to a local blood drive to donate and try to help somehow.
I got up to the nurse who took my blood pressure, and my blood pressure is usually something like 90 over 60, but that day it was like 140 over 120.
That's really high.
It was as I was driving home, I thought, you know, what is that? What happened to my blood pressure? And I realized, that's stress.
Suzanne is a researcher at McGill University. In the late 90s, she was studying environmental and genetic risk factors for mental illness. And part of her work was interviewing the mothers of patients with psychiatric problems.
And one of the things that I was asking them about was what happened during their pregnancies. You know, were there any major stressors?
The women she spoke to often had to think back decades about their pregnancies. And then the ice storm hit, and Suzanne's high blood pressure got her thinking.
If I'm stressed, then there must be hundreds, if not thousands, of pregnant women who are also stressed, and that would give us an opportunity.
Instead of relying on fuzzy memories, she could start talking with mothers about their stress right after the storm. She tracked their progress to try to figure out if the storm has any effect on how the babies turn out. The storm was also good to study because it was an independent event that could be isolated from other everyday stressors like work or money problems. Julie Grillot, the mom who was 8 months pregnant and hunkered down during the 98 ice storm, she ended up giving birth to her son, Vincent, in a hospital. But the hospital was working off generator power and kept having blackouts while she was in labor. Still, everything turned out okay. But when she got her baby boy home, Julie started noticing some things.
Vincent had a lot of allergy. And nobody at home have allergy, food allergy. So I was wondering, why does he have allergy? Why does he have reflux? He has some problem with all his eating. So I wondered, is it because of the stress that I gave him in the ice storm?
Every mother wonders if some little things she did caused her baby's problems. But Julie had this hugely disruptive storm to point to. When Vincent was about 6 months old, she got a letter in the mail and invited her to participate in a new study looking at the very thing she'd been worrying about: whether pregnant women stressed during the ice storm affected their children. Mom Julie signed up. It was led by that psychiatry professor, Suzanne King.
The initial questions really were which aspect of the mom's stress experience would have the effects on the unborn child, and in what domains of development would we see that? Cognitive development, motor development, behavior, and physical development.
Suzanne and her team enrolled about 200 mothers and have been following them and their children for two decades. The researchers asked the mothers about objective stressors, things like how many days they spent without power, how many times they changed shelters. They also asked about subjective stress, like irrelevant of tangible chaos, how stressed did the mother feel? 20 years into the study, the scientists are starting to see some trends. For one, they were surprised that different kinds of stress caused different outcomes. In the ice storm cohort,
the mother's objective stress from the ice storm is the best predictor of the children's cognitive development, so their IQ and their language. Also, everything having to do with physiological development. So that would be body mass index and obesity.
They found that the ice storm kids are more likely to have obesity. How stressed the mom felt is linked to behavioral outcomes.
The children as a group, as they move from elementary school through high school, so from childhood through adolescence, their levels of anxiety and depression are increasing as a group and going above the average for children their age.
Their levels of aggressiveness, which started out below average, are dropping even lower.
So they seem to be coming as a group more anxious, more depressed, and maybe more passive.
You can't really connect these traits to any particular child and say the storm caused them. But Julie Grillot still wonders. We're talking by phone, and she calls Vincent over.
Vincent? Okay, I'm going to pass to him, okay?
Hi.
Vincent is now 20. He's a carpenter.
I am quiet.
He is very quiet. I try really hard to get him to answer my questions in full sentences, to learn more about him. But it's not working, and I kind of start flailing.
Were you a good student?
I think Julie can hear me struggling and whispers in his ear, like prompting him.
Not too much, but it's all right.
So you still have allergies now?
Yes, I have allergy to peanut and milk.
His peanut allergy is so serious that he actually went to the hospital last year.
I kissed my girlfriend, and she eat
chocolate
with the peanuts inside.
Turns out his girlfriend is there listening and whispering too. And she's also an ice storm baby. She was born about a month after the storm.
My name is Valérie. I'm not shy. I mean, I like talking with people.
She and her mom are not part of the study. But when she learned about it from Vincent, she got curious and started reading. The ice storm findings that kids born after the storm tend to be more anxious struck her. Valérie says she's really anxious. She cries easily, gets angry.
Even if it's just a little thing, for me, it's like a big thing. I mean, everything that I see or everything that happens for me, it's always so intense, even if it's not.
She says it's kind of a problem for her. It upsets her.
Because I look at my sisters and I'm like, why it always happens to me? I mean, they're so normal and not really stressful. And I'm like, everything that happened, I'm just, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I can't believe it happens to me.
She goes to therapy and has learned to calm herself more. But the ice storm findings have her worried about something else.
I want kids with him, but sometimes I just think about that and I'm like, oh my God, do we have more chance to have kids with problems?
Irina Zhurov reported that story.
Hey, Giatri.
Hi, Irina.
So that worry from the young woman Valérie in my story is a question that researchers have too. Yes, it appears environment can influence a developing fetus, but the next question is, Could those changes in the fetus be passed to the second and even the third generation, to babies down the line?
Scientists think this is possible because of something called epigenetics. Usually, when we talk about genetics, we think about how traits can change over time because of changes in the sequence of DNA. So, let's imagine the notes of a song. It would be like actually changing one of the notes. But epigenetics is how traits can change without altering the actual sequence. So in our song, the notes would all stay the same, but maybe you're slowing the notes down or making them louder. And stress is one of these things that can change how the notes in your DNA are played.
Researchers think that may be the body's way of programming the developing fetus for the world they'll emerge into, you know, to prepare them.
So there's one study where researchers found that people born to women who were pregnant during famine in World War II had higher rates of obesity when they got older. They think that the mother sent signals to their babies to prepare for a world of hunger, but after the war, the famine ended. So there was this mismatch between the world they were programmed for and the one they ended up living in.
In other words, the world changed, but the baby's genes didn't get the memo.
And scientists don't totally understand the mechanics of how these memos do or don't reach babies' developing bodies, but they're working on it.
Meanwhile, scientists are also looking for ways to help pregnant women who are experiencing stress. They're testing an intervention, something the researchers hope will stop that mismatch from developing in their kid.
Next up, reporter Davis Land is in Houston. He's been looking into some strategies that could help pregnant women.
With the ice storm study in Canada still ongoing, researchers started following moms and their babies in other natural disasters. A flood in Iowa, another in Australia, a fire in Alberta. In each case, they're asking slightly different questions. The latest storm they're looking at is Hurricane Harvey, which flooded thousands of homes along the Gulf Coast. With Harvey, they're not only looking at levels of stress.
So another question we are asking in this study is whether a simple, easily accessible, very brief exercise can be helpful for reducing some of the stress associated with Hurricane Harvey.
That's Johanna Bick. She's a researcher at the University of Houston.
So one thing that we're testing is whether we can have mothers engage in a writing exercise that we think might be therapeutic.
They give study participants different prompts to write from, and we'll try to figure out if some of them help ease stress. The idea is to at least address their subjective stress, how moms are feeling. In the ice storm study, that affected things like anxiety and aggression in the child. With the intervention, maybe then moms could avoid passing the wrong signals on to their developing babies. Sarah Benazouz is part of the study. She's a mom with two twin girls. In the months since Harvey, they've bounced between a few friends' houses. Right now, they live with Sarah's old high school friend. Sarah shows me a couch in the living room.
This pulls out into a bed.
Okay.
And that's where we sleep for now.
All three of you?
Yep.
Sarah was just a few weeks pregnant with her third kid when Harvey hit.
It was right after the storm. It was like maybe 2 days later. I had like this enormous pain in my stomach.
She went to the hospital, and it turned out the pregnancy wasn't viable. After that, things got bad really fast. First, there was the stress of losing a baby. Then, in the middle of rebuilding their home from the flood, Sarah's relationship with her fiancé started to unravel. So Sarah and her two girls, they moved out. But 6 weeks later, Sarah realized she was actually pregnant again. But she was on her own, and she and her kids didn't have a home. She was stressed and scared almost constantly. Then, one day, Sarah sees an ad on Facebook for the Harvey study. She enrolls, and they have her journal for 4 days, 10 minutes each day.
Every single writing prompt, when I finished writing, I would sit back and think about what I had just written. And they ask you afterwards, how did you feel while writing this? You know, and there's bullets, you know, happy, sad, miserable. And I actually would think, like, how do I feel right now? This is crazy that I'm having to, I've never actually written about it, you know. Doing this study kind of made me confront feelings that I had suppressed for a really long time.
Sarah says she had been so focused on just surviving that she hadn't confronted the feelings of bitterness and insecurity that she had been holding back.
Doing these running exercises, coming away from it, did you notice a change in how you're thinking about things? Or
totally. After my part was completed, I remember talking to my mom on the phone, and she was asking me about it, you know, and I just told her, I said, I feel so much better because I've been able to kind of think about things that I haven't thought about or, you know, things that I've been dwelling on that I haven't been able to talk to anyone about.
So Sarah says writing did help her think through her experience and lower her feelings of stress. The Houston researcher, Joanna Bick, again.
If we could establish that this is effective, then this would be really valuable for future events like Hurricane Harvey that we know were going to occur.
It's a small intervention, sure. But in a disaster, when seeing a counselor isn't an option, a notebook could also be a powerful tool.
That's Davis Land reporting in Houston. Sarah, the mom we met in his story, just had her baby boy Silas. Her family found a 3-bedroom apartment, and everyone's doing well.